If you've been wrestling with a bit of a legal question or just wondering where to start, perhaps now's the time to get in touch, because the president of the Queensland Law Society, Bill Potts, and Christine Smythe, a wills, estates and elders law expert, are both here in the studio. Their legal minds are just waiting for your question. 1300 222 612. It's not often that you get a lawyer on the phone for free. So here they are, 1300 222 612. While we're waiting for your call or your text on 0467 922 612. Good morning. How are you going? I thought we could start. There's always interesting legal stuff in the news, and interesting to hear what those in their profession think about it. But when I was thinking about having you guys on today, I was thinking, oh, good, we can talk about Israel Folau, because I thought it was going to be really interesting. And then, of course, it unfolded this week that there was a settlement reached. But to recap, Israel Folau posted on social media about certain groups of people going to hell, including gay people. Rugby Australia asked him to remove it. He refused to. He was sacked. I thought we were going to get a good look at the limits of free speech, or the right to express religious views, or the power of an organisation to protect its image. I thought that's what it was all going to be about. And then the settlement. What were you hoping for? What did we learn?
Oh, those pesky lawyers. Because what's happened, of course, is that they've had a settlement, and the terms of the settlement are secret. So in theory, we'll never know. Mm. In practice, however, I suspect, like all things, things will leak out and rumours will become truths, and truths will in turn will become facts. So in this case, you're quite right. It was a battle between Mr. Folau's inalienable right to have his own views and express them, as opposed to his role as an employee, essentially, of Rugby Union Australia, where they espouse values and beliefs different than his. So the question then was whether his contract of employment prevented him from effectively expressing views which are contrary to those of his employers. And the end result was, we don't know.
So this is do you think it's still a live legal question in Australia?
Absolutely it is. There was recently an Australian government employee who made negative comments about the policy of her particular department, and she found herself on the wrong end of a sacking as a result of expressing negative views about her employer's policies and decisions. Mm-hmm. And from a legal perspective, we're seeing more and more in employment contracts prohibitions against employees utilising social media in a way that's going to negatively impact their employer, and it's becoming a negotiation tool.
So what do you mean a negotiation tool?
So most people will have social media, and employers can't control the use of that social media, but they can control the circumstances in which an employee conducts itself. So they can build it into the contract of employment with the employee, and they can build in the range of terms. And that's effectively a way of controlling what the employees say or do not say on social media.
And the Folau case was basically about money, because, of course, Rugby Union Australia needs people, fans, to come through the turnstiles and turn up. But more importantly, it needs sponsors. And some of the sponsors, in particular Qantas, have very strong views about particularly LGBTIQ type standards. And the end result of that is that faced with someone who was effectively espousing views which were deeply controversial and deeply offensive to their major sponsors, that's when the battle came about.
Do you think it's this whole idea of the settlement before it goes to court, isn't it just an example of the legal system, the failings of the legal system in a way, because it seems to always end up being about money, and the whole legal system is so expensive when you want to have a decent firepower, that so often in any different aspect of the law, it becomes about settling in order to avoid going bankrupt trying to achieve justice. Is that a failing of the legal system?
On the contrary, I see it as a positive of the legal system. The legal system has built into it this opportunity where the parties themselves can resolve it in that legal framework. Instead of taking the gamble as to which judge you're going to go before and their views coming into play about it, you get to control that outcome. And in a overcrowded court system, it's actually a very economic process where the parties themselves come to a resolution. It's actually cheaper, it's more efficient, and the parties involved have more control of the outcome. When you go into a courtroom, you don't have control of the outcome. And as far as these two parties were concerned, then perhaps one of the factors for them is sometimes the cessation of an issue has greater value than the monetary outcome.
I mean, none of those things are about justice, though, are they?
It's a legal system.
It's not a justice system. Right, that is the difference. do you agree, Bill? Is the legal system a good justice system, or are they two entirely different things?
They are entirely two different concepts. I often tell my clients that when they're coming to court, it's more often not about truth, and sometimes it's not about justice. It's often about proof, and that is the capacity of one party or the other to prove their case to the appropriate standard. And often witnesses go bad, their memories fade, they don't come up to the proof that they were so confident of in the lawyer's office. And sometimes the courts just look at people and say, well, we don't accept what you're saying. So going to court is often about giving people a fair trial. It's not about giving them a Rolls Royce. Often it's an old Volkswagen, but the reality is that everybody, no matter how wealthy they are, whether it's Mr. Falau or whether it's Joe Average in the street, all should come before the law equally. Having said that,
they don't, though, do they?
Well,
it's
they
about
don't.
What the legal firepower that you can afford.
And often that's the case. In this case, Mr. Falau had very wealthy and highly paid lawyers. What was that old song? Yeah, better get a lawyer, son. Better get a real good one.
Oh, dear. That's the way it is, isn't it? 17 past 11 on ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland. If you'd like to take part in a legal discussion or you have a little question that you'd like resolved or at least some advice on where to start, 1300 222 612 is the number. Here in the studio is the president of the Queensland Law Society, Bill Potts, and Christine Smythe, who is a wills, estates and elders law expert. Actually, Christine, I was thinking about a story last week where the idea of elder abuse or domestic violence was being tackled in a slightly different way through educating hairdressers on how to direct people to help. They were finding that Hairdressers with Hearts, I think it was called, where they were finding that they would often be in rather deep conversations with some of their clients and wanting to have more on offer than, oh, that's too bad, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. And in particular, they identified domestic violence situations and elders abuse situations as where they could really step in and help. Is that encouraging to you as someone who works in that area?
Oh, absolutely. It's a great scheme because, as we all know, we go to our hairdressers and it's almost like a confessional, isn't it? We chat to them in quite a bit of detail. That scheme's not too dissimilar to the scheme that I spearheaded when I was at the Law Society, and we had a similar scheme involving GPs, and we saw a spike in numbers of reporting the abuse, because one of the big issues with our elder cohort is that they didn't grow up in the Facebook generation. So these things are considered highly private by them, and there's a degree of shame that's associated with it. And the more we speak about it in a public context and the more it becomes a common issue to be discussed, it reduces that level, that threshold level of shame, enabling them to report it.
But it's such a difficult thing because when you're talking about elder abuse or sometimes it's just a little bit of a big bit of pressure, of kind of trying to leverage relationships and stuff to get more money out of the parents.
As you get older, you do become vulnerable. It's not a question of you losing your capacity. But, you know, as we all age, you're starting to get old when you start telling people about your ailments. And that physical frailty also affects your confidence levels. And most often these elderly people are deeply dependent on family to provide them care and assistance. And it's that interaction of that dependence and how far it goes into stepping into abuse. And I noticed earlier you mentioned domestic violence as a separate element to elder abuse. Actually, elder abuse quite often is domestic violence. And the definition of domestic violence includes financial abuse. And I quite frequently will use the domestic violence legislation as part of one of the tools in my toolkit in assisting clients to navigate elder abuse, because it happens quite a bit.
That's an interesting point, because otherwise you could consider it a separate thing could make it a lesser thing or not quite have the same weight. But you're right, it is when you think about it, it's a totally equal situation in terms of trying to exert financial control, and very interesting. Colleen is on the line in Townsville. Good day, Colleen.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Your question?
Yes. I'm one of the executors of my father's estate, but he's still alive. He's 91. He's in a nursing home now. But I was also one of the executors. Attorneys, enduring power of attorney. I was just one of three. There's three of us, and we were severally. And one of the other persons, the enduring power of attorneys, wanted to purchase a property, as in a lot of land, and that from my father's.
Estate,
yes, sorry, even though he's still alive, wanted to purchase without a valuation, and because just the way it was worded in the will and everything, and anyway, so I made application to QCAT for an interim order, and also permanent for public trustees to take over my dad's affairs and everything, because he has no money, cash money, even though he's in a nursing home. Mm-hmm. But we have to sell property to pay for the nursing home and bills around the place. QCAT have placed public trustees as a
administrator.
Just as temporary ones, and we were supposed to have the first decision meeting. There was a meeting that was supposed to take back in November, but one of the other executors or enduring power of attorneys couldn't participate because of a family sickness. Anyway, if my father dies between now and everything being sorted out, like property being sold, the nursing home being paid, bills being paid, what happens?
Okay. Enduring power of attorney only lasts while the person is alive. An appointment as a financial administrator only lasts while the person is alive. Those documents cease to have any force or effect immediately on death. The use of any of those documents post-death can in fact constitute a criminal act of fraud. With respect to the will, it's of no consequence until your father passes away. So it also depends on what state your father is in. So does he or does he not have capacity? I take it from the fact that the public trustee has been appointed an interim administrator that there are some issues around his capacity. So I take it therefore that his will is not looking at being changed. So if he dies between now and a final determination, then it will revert to his will and whatever his will says.
And how do bills get paid if there's no cash money?
That's a real problem. Typically, what would happen is you're not obliged to accept the appointment of executor. So that's the first thing that everyone has to understand. But if you do accept your appointment as executor, you are responsible for administering the estate. If the estate doesn't have any cash, then typically you would engage a lawyer who would then negotiate with the creditors to put basically the claim in abeyance until the estate could be brought into a liquid state. Or alternatively, you as executor can meet that payment yourself. You're not obliged to meet that payment, and you then would become a debtor to the estate.
Yeah. And the three executors of Dad's estate are myself and two other family members, and I was the one who made application to QCAT, and they appointed public trustees because of conflict of interest on several areas. So then I would have to deal with the two other executors of the estate then as well too?
Yes, that's correct. So if you've been appointed generally under the law, you're appointed jointly unless they also renounce. You can renounce your appointment of executor. If you don't want one of them to be the executor, you'd have to bring an application to have them removed as executor.
Right. Or both of them. I could have both of them removed?
It's technically possible. It's extremely difficult.
Right, okay then.
Colleen, thank you so much for that call. It is a very difficult and complicated area that you work in, Christine, at a time when relationships become quite frayed, where promises made over years come to the fore, perhaps, or perhaps promises that nobody else knew about come to the fore. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's very interesting to see, even on the front page of the paper today, a claim involving Bob Cork, who, of course, has passed away. What are the issues at play there?
His daughter is bringing a claim in New South Wales for what we call further and better provision from the estate. In effect, she's saying that the amount that she was left in the estate is insufficient to meet her needs. And the context of that type of claim involves establishing what her needs are in the context of what financial resources she has and the financial resources of the estate and other people involved. One of the interesting aspects of her claim is that she's claiming that her father asked her not to report a rape that she says occurred in the 1980s. And in exchange for not reporting that, she's saying that he promised that he would leave her a larger sum of money in his estate. Basically, she's relying on the legal concept of promissory estoppel. And she's pushing that particular application, and that happens quite a bit in estate matters. So when you've got estate matters, it's not just a claim on the will. You can raise, and often do raise, other legal claims as a course of action.
So this will be interesting to see how it proceeds?
Definitely, considering that the two major players involved, Bob himself and the person she accused of raping her, are both dead. So as we were talking earlier, Bill, about these type of matters, you can't defame a deceased person. And we've interestingly seen some interesting news around the defamation laws recently, haven't we? With the Elon Musk matter.
Oh, the Elon Musk matter, yes. Mr. Musk allegedly referred to somebody as a pedo, a pedophile, essentially.
And on Twitter, this came after the remember that the time of the Thai cave rescue,
exactly.
And he delivered this, or said he would deliver this submarine, and it was a cave explorer who was mocking him. I think it was on a TV program, was mocking that he would do that and saying it was all a PR stunt, and he was sort of fairly blunt and some might say rude about how he responded to that. And then Elon responded on Twitter and use that word that you said, call him that pedo guy, which is, and then tweeted again afterwards. So that was the subject of the cave explorer saying, excuse me, Mr. $20 billion, you can't make that kind of a statement and get away with it. Tried to sue him for defamation in the United States, asking for a sum which in Australian money was more than $200 million.
I think it was about $200 million.
$200 million,
yes. Quite an impressive amount of money.
Yes, and failed.
And failed. And the reason, it seems, is that the court found that he was being insulting, he was being rude, but they didn't think it carried the defamatory intent or the defamatory content that this man was alleging. Accordingly, having rolled the dice, he walked away with absolutely nothing. And Mr. Musk...
America is, you hear about freedom of speech in America. Would that case play out exactly the same in other places around the world?
I highly doubt it.
Mm. Yeah, very interesting. Mm. Just before we let you go, you mentioned developments in the area of claims farming. What's happened there?
Okay.
This is not your average type of farming.
No, it's not. And no vegetables or food will come from claims farming. There has been, over the last several years, a development where people are finding that they've visited a doctor, they might have had a motor vehicle accident, and they get a phone call from somebody, often with a strange accent, saying, look, we know all about this issue, we've appointed lawyers for you, and just give us some details and your lawyers will contact you. And, of course, what they were doing was, with a little bit of information somehow obtained through the internet, through government sites and the like, they were, in fact, collating and gathering together large numbers of claims, and they were then selling them to lawyers. And the effect of that was that there was a spike in quite often very small claims. The end effect of all of that was that we saw... effectively an imbalance developing in the system. Many people were annoyed. And so I'm pleased to say that this week the Queensland government has brought into law legislation which prevents claims farming. So that's a really good thing.
Well, there you are. you might not get that call. Or if you do, you should call a lawyer about it because it shouldn't be coming to you. Kate O'Toole is my name. You're on ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland, and you've been hearing from our legal experts today, President of the Queensland Law Society, Bill Potts, and Christine Smythe, who's an expert in wills, estates and elders law. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Anytime. Thank you.